Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Lowe's sabe que a todos nos gusta ahorrar, especialmente en esta temporada. Por eso escogimos deals buenísimos para Early Black Friday. Obtén gratis una herramienta selecta DeWalt, Cobalt o Craftsman al comprar una batería o un kit selecto. También tenemos árboles de Navidad preiluminados selectos desde $59.98, porque nunca es muy pronto para poner el arbolito. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Hasta agotar existencia, selección varía por lugar.
I'm Emma Kenny, welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
So you are under caution, so anything you say is getting recorded.
Okay. What if maybe a suspect is because, like, I was supposed to see them, like, how come I'm a suspect?
Pardon?
Like, how come I'm a suspect?
How come you're a suspect?
Because I'm the last person I've seen them, is it?
I don't know. All the information I've received is you are a suspect, okay?
You Eddie?
Yeah.
Eddie, you're on suspicion of murder, all right? You didn't have to say anything, but you may harm you potentially didn't mention when questioned. You later lie in court and introduce every evidence. Do you understand?
Yeah.
I can explain it.
Listen.
Right, listen.
Do it all on interview, all right? You're going to say it's to run court and you'll be interviewed about it and they'll ask you questions, all right?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. I wanted to cover today's story a while ago because when the story broke, I was really interested in it and I followed it. But I've paused to actually talk about this story just to give her family some space, essentially from the origin of the crime to the actual perpetrators being found guilty. And also to see how things have played out since for all those involved, because it gives me a more holistic understanding of exactly what happened to Brianna Guy and also what has happened to the perpetrators involved in this case. And of course, the most important people who remain, which is Brianna's family. The truth is that when we lose people that we love to traumatic loss, it is deeply, deeply challenging to navigate. And murder of a child is going to be the most challenging thing that anyone would ever have to navigate. So even though I'd done the research prior to today, I did want to follow it up with where we are now. And also, as I said, just give that all important pause as a respect to the family. I think that for many of us who know about the case of Brianna Guy, it challenges us on a range of levels because we want to believe that children are growing into human beings who are going to be well-adjusted and pro-social. And when people breach those boundaries, the reality is it questions everything that we know about our expectations around children. For those of you who don't know this case, stay tuned. I hope that we do Brianna justice. Let's talk about Brianna. She was a 16-year-old transgender girl. And what I know throughout is that she's always referred to in the press as transgender girl. And I obviously acknowledge that that's important to some degree because of the way that people will consider potentially this being partly a hate crime. But there is a part of me also that just feels like for Brianna's memory, we should just refer to her as a girl because she was presenting and living and spending her life as a girl. She'd been dressing and absolutely projecting the world around her that she was indeed female. And that was certainly her chosen gender and the one that she felt most comfortable with. Also, for those of you who don't understand transgenderism, body dysphoria, it's a very challenging mental health condition. So when you are dysphoric, and I think that people probably don't understand the nuances unless they work in fields like my own, just because there are so many deeply political conversations around this at the moment. But I just want to move all of that to the side and bring it down to the professional experience that I've had with dysphoria, which is where an individual feels a lack of comfort with the way that they are within their assigned gender. And they realise that there is a level of comfort associated with presenting as the gender that they feel belongs most accurately to how they feel as a human being. And usually the person who socially transitions feels a great sense of peace around doing so. So I'm coming at it from that perspective. And that being said, Brianna is somebody who was living her life as a girl, and I really want to address her in that way, as opposed to putting that transgenderism in front of who she was as a key individual. She was from Birchwood in Warrington, which is just down the road from me. It's not far at all. My sister used to live in Warrington. My sister taught in Warrington. So it's an area I'm very, very aware of. She was the daughter of Esther Guy and Peter Spooner. And she is and was an incredibly much loved child of theirs. She had an older sister named Alicia Guy, and Esther and Peter were actually separated, as are so many families these days. And she actually had a stepfather, Wesley Powell. So the ripples of her loss runs deep. What I would say about Brianna and her mum is that Brianna was just blessed. She was blessed with a woman who is a warrior with respect, and you'll see that as I talk about this story today, but who absolutely had Brianna's best interests at heart and was her biggest cheerleader and supporter. Brianna did suffer with mental health issues. She had anxiety. She had been diagnosed with ADHD and also ASD as a teenager. And as I note, she also would have had dysphoria, which is to do with the gender issues people experience. She genuinely struggled with socialising because of these issues. Going out on her own was hard because of her anxiety. She had a small circle of friends, and I garnered from what I've read that there was a level of loneliness in her life. And I think a lot of young people feel this way. I think that you can have friends, you can have family around you, but there is this internal struggle. I think a lot of us relate to that, that you can be in a room full of people who love you and you still just feel that there's something missing. It's like a longing. And that loneliness is something that, particularly in our early years, we can struggle with. As we grow older, I think we make peace with it. Often it becomes the intrinsic part of the self that no one else can touch, like the actual who we are, the part of us that no one else can affect. But when we're younger, it can feel really...
Hey, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Really alienating and really isolating and quite scary. So she doesn't necessarily feel like she's a popular person, even though she is popular, because she's basically doing really well on social media. She got 30,000 followers on TikTok. She posted lovely videos there, styling her hair. She did lip-syncing pop songs. And I think that having that sense of community is really helpful to a lot of us. You know, I have it here. I feel genuinely cradled and embraced and cared for by you guys. And no doubt she would have got a certain sense of validation and community from doing those things. But it can also make you long for that in reality. It can make you think, you know, wouldn't it be cool if all these people who connect with me and just seem to get me online spent time with me in real life? A lot of us feel that because you meet your tribe and you want that tribe to play out in reality, not just online. Also, she understandably was quite a role model for people who were transgender because they were looking up to her for inspiration because of her courage. She was trying to unapologetically be herself. And whenever you are a period of transition, change, whether you're going through different age chronologies and you're changing up as a person, you're always looking for other people who seem to have done it before you because it gives you mentorship and leadership. And she was providing that. Brianna was described by her mum as larger than life, funny, witty, and usually fearless. She attended Birchwood High School, and Brianna's head teacher actually described her, quote, as iconic. She said that Brianna was such a huge character in school. Everyone knew who she was, and losing her has hit everybody so hard. Her classmates were interviewed, and I've heard them talk about her being beautiful, being hilarious. Also, I heard one of them actually say that when she looked at Brianna, she wanted to be like her. There was just something about her courage that really inspired her. And people had such lovely things to say about her. I often think that the person who is lost, it's such a shame they don't get the opportunity to listen to the conversations that people have about them, because I'm sure that Brianna didn't have any idea of how cared for that she was. And so often in life, we don't tell the people that we share our space with just how important they are to us, because we always think there's going to be a tomorrow. And children and young people, as they grow up with their friendships, it's quite awkward to say to the people that we really care for, I really care for you, you know, your kind of friend that I just want to aspire to be like. But I wish that those conversations had happened, because Brianna clearly would have been moved by just how important she was in people's lives. On the 11th of February 2023, Brianna is 16 at this point. So she is literally just beginning her life. She leaves the house for the last time. And the reason for that is she's got an invite out. A girl called Scarlett Jenkinson, who she considers a friend, has invited her to meet her. So at 12:45, she leaves her home in Birchwood. And she actually messaged her mum to say that she was going to go and see Scarlett, and said that the dogs are locked up. So she's being responsible, isn't she? She's letting her mother know where she's going. She's making sure that her mum knows that the dogs are all locked up. She's being a really responsible child. And it also demonstrates the fact that she wants to let her mother know, I'm going out, because clearly she has anxiety. So it's really positive that she's decided that she actually wants to go and meet her friend. Brianna then walks to the bus stop. She boards the number 28 bus. And Scarlett has at this point advised Brianna to get a child single ticket on the bus. That's deeply ominous, isn't it? To be advised by someone that you're meeting to get a single bus ticket. Obviously for Brianna, she won't be reading into that in any way, shape or form. She actually messaged her mum on that bus and said, I'm on the bus by myself, I'm scared. And her mum responded, oh, that's well good. And you can just hear, can't you, there, that her mother's being really positive. She's taking that anxiety that Brianna's feeling, she's reframing it, and she's giving it a back as, wow, you've overcome that, you're on that bus, you're doing it. And that's very, very present within their relationship, that connection. The fact that her mother is always seeing those milestones is so important to raise up. Like I said, Brianna struggled to go out by herself, and her mum was super proud of her for doing this. Brianna then gets off the bus near Culchith Library, and this is where she was going to be meeting Scarlett Jenkinson and also Scarlett's friend, Eddie Ratcliffe. So the trio are going to go and hang out, have some fun. It's a big deal for Brianna, and understandably, she's going to have this anxiety and want to be made to have a sense of peace over that connection and meeting. Now, the trio, the last seen on CCTV at 2:02 p.m., this is heading in the direction of Culchith Linear Park. Brianna was actually spotted by several people within the park. Phone records also show that Brianna and Scarlett were messaging each other on Snapchat, even though they were actually together. So they're in the same space, but as young people do, they have conversations on technology as well as face-to-face. So Brianna's messaging Scarlett saying, girl, I'ma wait where I am until we have drugs, lol. And Brianna's telling Scarlett, I'm too anxious. So she's also acknowledging her feelings. Scarlett had actually been exchanging messages with an account that she'd set up pretending to be a drug dealer. So Scarlett has created this fantasy where essentially she is having a conversation with an apparent drug dealer to get drugs. But Brianna is bright and she's just smelling that something is off. And she actually messages another friend saying that Scarlett was so weird and that she thinks that she's pretending to have a dealer. So Brianna is really, really aware. And the fact that she's texting a friend to let that friend know there's something a little bit odd and untoward going on, it means that that anxiety that she's feeling is probably going to be amplified at this point. Now at 3:06 p.m., Brianna's phone actually sent a message to Scarlett which said, girl, where are you? But we get to then 3:13 p.m. So that message that's been sent saying, girl, where are you? It's literally minutes from where we're at now, which is 3:13 p.m. And at 3:13 p.m., so only a few minutes later, 999 is called. And the reason that 999 is called is that the body of Brianna is found face down in the mud in a pathway in Culchith Linear Park, and she has got multiple stab wounds. So think about the fact that she has apparently texted to say, girl, where are you, to Scarlett? And yet somehow in that small space of time, she's found herself being stabbed to death, essentially. it doesn't make sense that she would be the person who sent that.
Sorry, I think I'm also with a request for a police and ambulance.
A dog walker, somebody called Catherine Vise, had actually found Brianna, and she didn't know immediately that she was so mortally wounded. She reported that someone was seriously injured. She said that she'd seen the attackers run away. And she said to the operator, I think she's been attacked severely, her face, her back. She may even have been stabbed. There's blood coming out of her back. I'm just going to try and stop people coming down here because you wouldn't, oh my God. So you can see that as she's looking at the scene, as she's seeing what's happening, as she's trying to stop people coming down to the scene, she's suddenly realizing the severity of what's happened. There is a child who has been so violently attacked. Emergency services obviously were called. When they arrived, they tried to revive Brianna, but she was pronounced dead at 4:02 p.m. And when I talk about her injuries, it'll become clear why she died. The wounds showed that she'd literally been hacked to death. The only way I can describe it. The savagery was utterly appalling. A post-mortem revealed that she'd been stabbed 28 times. She'd been stabbed in her head and her neck and her back. There were wounds that were penetrating her heart, both lungs, major blood vessels. In fact, to be clear, her jugular vein had been severed. And of course, when your jugular vein gets severed, it just causes catastrophic blood loss. And she'd actually been stabbed with such force that they damaged the bones of her ribs, her vertebrae, and her sternum. So horrific injuries. Understandably, when the news got out that a 16-year-old girl had been so horrifically butchered, there was an outrage, an outcry in the community. There was just revulsion. People couldn't believe that this child had gone out to meet her friends and had ended up butchered in this way. And vigils were literally held across the globe. So it had this enormous impact because, firstly, it's just so unusual. Bear in mind, Brianna was not a child that was an individual who hung out in scenarios and situations that one could ever envisage could lead to this kind of encounter. She wasn't involved in gangs. She wasn't a child who went out and looked for trouble. She was a lovely young girl who was just trying to find her way in the world. There were no hallmarks or reasons as to why she would end up in such a terrible scenario. It's what you think about when you consider serial killers. A person goes out, gets on with a day, falls into the lair of one of these human predators and ends up absolutely murdered in the most brutal of fashion. So it's very unusual. And following the reports of her death, one of the things that was very clear was the police were basically told that it was important to treat the killing as a hate crime. So there's a lot of pressure because of what I've already talked about regarding Brianna and the way she presented. But the police at the time said, listen, we don't really feel that's the motivation. We don't believe that Brianna being transgender was the reason that she was murdered. And I think that's really important to acknowledge because what we're seeing here is that Brianna is a victim and there is no contributing factor aside from the fact that she is a girl who is now a victim of a very serious crime. And to not necessarily layer it over with the issue of it being a hate crime, because to some degree, that means that we're not acknowledging that this young girl with everything to live for could be murdered just because somebody wanted to murder her. Less to do with a motivation, which would be terrible in itself, but you would almost have this understanding that some people can be so hate-fueled, so blinkered, that they will use that as a permission base, and that doesn't in any way garner any sympathy or empathy towards that person, not at all. But you have this kind of consequential understanding of, oh, this person's got such a warped idea of the world that it's led to this action, and I'm not going to give the killers that excuse. It's worse than that. This is a cold-blooded execution, and it's to do with people literally having no value for this young girl's life. Now, within 24 hours of her death, it didn't take long for detectives to close in on her killers. So first of all, two people were actually seen in the area of the murder. They've got CCTV footage, etc. And they'd actually put out already the fact that they're looking for two people who were a white man and woman in the late teens or early 20s. They knew that both of them apparently had dark curly hair, but they've got a lot of information that means it's not going to take them very long to figure out who the main suspects are. And it doesn't. On the 12th of February, two 15-year-olds were arrested on suspicion of murder in their homes. And when you actually see them getting arrested...
Hey, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
There isn't shock. One of them, Scarlett, feigns shock to some degree. She starts immediately trying to come up with some kind of cover story. But I would say Eddie, in this case, the other perpetrator, he just immediately is thinking, oh my goodness, this is real. Now I need to explain it. So I would say that neither of them do a very good job of looking like they're completely innocent. There's no anger, there's no shock, there's no shouting, what on earth's going on? It's more of a acceptance of the situation with a play to try to create excuses to explain why the police have ended up at their house considering them to be suspects.
So you are under caution, so anything you say is getting recorded.
Okay. But if I'm maybe a suspect, it's because, like, I was last person at seeing her, like, how come I'm a suspect?
Pardon?
Like, how come I'm a suspect?
How come you're a suspect?
Because I'm last person at seeing her, is it?
I don't know. All the information I've received is you are a suspect, OK?
You Eddie?
Yeah.
Eddie, you're locked up suspicion of murder, all right? You don't have to say anything, but you may harm your defence if you don't mention when questioned. So you later land in court, and if you do say the evidence, do you understand?
Yeah. I can explain it.
No, listen.
Right, listen.
Do it all on interview, all right? Yeah. You're going to take it to the corner, you'll be interviewed about it, they'll ask you questions, all right?
Yeah.
We get to the 15th of February. This is 4 days after the murder of Brianna. Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe, at this point, are charged with the murder of Brianna Guy. And as they were charged, the family of Scarlett just sobbed in court. Eddie's family basically held hands for the duration of the hearing, and both of the defendants were understandably remanded into youth detention. They were clearly not seen as being fit to be bailed. The two teens who were charged were 15-year-old Scarlett Jenkinson. She was a local girl. She'd actually been considered a recently new, but a nonetheless good friend by Brianna. And then 15-year-old Eddie Ratcliffe. So he'd been seen with Scarlett and Brianna in Culturth on the day of the crime. He didn't know her. She didn't know him. Now, neither Scarlett or Eddie had been in any trouble with the police before. But as they start to do some due diligence on the backgrounds of these children, because they are children, they're 15, which is harrowing, isn't it, to conceive that 15-year-olds have carried out the crime that we've just been discussing. When they start to look into their backgrounds, it's clear that they do have a fascination, shall we say, with violence, with torture, with murder. And anybody who's watching my channel now, to some degree we do. To some degree, we want to find out about serial killers, about murderers, about victims. But I would say 99.9% of us want to do that because we cannot imagine for 1 minute doing such harm. It provokes something so visceral and cerebral in it that we just think to ourselves, I need to understand why. I need to figure out what creates these killers or what motivates these individuals. So we're doing it not in a voyeuristic fashion, quite the contrary, we're doing it in an empathic way where we're trying to figure out what creates killers. How do we prevent victims being victims? How do we create a legacy of justice for those who lose their lives to these kind of killings? And that's our motivation. But understandably, there's a small percentage who are titillated by it. And it does feel that Scarlett and Eddie fall into that category. Now, when you look at the backgrounds of these two children, Scarlett Jenkinson, first of all, she comes from a really loving home, a supportive home. She lives in Warrington. Her mum taught design technology at a Catholic secondary school. Her father was a plasterer. She was the youngest of four siblings. Neighbours of the family who were interviewed after she was arrested said, listen, the family is lovely. They just are a really nice group of people. There was nothing untoward about them at all. As a teenager, what does happen is Scarlett starts to begin gaming, but hey, it's one of the most common experiences for children all over the UK. The game doesn't make you a killer. But I suppose what you could say is gaming can sometimes introduce you to people that you wouldn't ordinarily meet. And sometimes the conversations that go on online are not the type of conversations you might have on a one-to-one level. And also, certain games are quite violent. And if you have a tenacity, a predisposition, a desire for violence, that can certainly incite further violence. I don't think you can take somebody without violent inclination and make them violent, but I think if you already have that within you predisposed, then it can exacerbate those. She then does start to struggle with self-harm, which means that she's obviously dealing with some overwhelming feelings mentally. And it does seem that this time she starts to develop what would be considered a morbid fascination with serial killers. But again, a lot of us have morbid fascinations with serial killers. It doesn't make us a killer. But most of us have a fascination with serial killers because they're so strange to us. But there can be a group, a small percentage of people who model themselves on serial killers, as opposed to being horrified by their actions, they're excited by their actions. As opposed to seeing them as so deeply different to who we are, they see themselves as almost affiliating themselves with that kind of personality. And it could be that these two are doing just that. Now, Scarlett had attended Culchurth High School, but by the time she was 12, she was essentially struggling to some degree. And it was common knowledge that she had a kill list of children who she didn't have a particular liking for. And she also was apparently somebody who would go around and try and recruit other pupils to take part in blood rituals. Very unusual, totally atypical behaviour. That said, we all knew somebody at school who liked the occult. We all knew somebody at school who was constantly trying to get you to do a Ouija board. We all always knew somebody at school who was reading tarot. There's always an individual or individuals who just are a little bit into subculture. And again, that doesn't mean for one moment they're going to do anything terrible. If you came into my home and you looked on my bookshelves, you would think this person has certainly got some weird taste. No, it's just that I have a fascination with different ideas and I like to learn, usually because I have a very clear moralistic path, and things that deviate from that, I can't help being captivated by them because it means that I see the world from different sets of eyes. It doesn't make me change my perspective or my viewpoint, but I'm so intoxicated by learning. And I think a lot of us relate to that. So at school, you see a lot of kids saying and doing things that are weird. And then 15 years later, they're an accountant with two children living a really mundane lifestyle without any inkling or inclination of the things that they used to be like in the past. But it doesn't feel like that's the case of Scarlett. It feels like these are red flags. She's really into the area of serial killers, and she apparently had notebooks just full of the methods that these people killed using and the characters themselves, the personalities. She knew everything about Richard Ramirez, about Harold Shipman, about Jeffrey Dahmer. So this goes further than just being interested. This feels like a deep dive scenario. There is something about these killers that really speaks to her. And also, she's accessing the dark web. So for those of you who don't know what that is, you download Tor. Obviously, it gives you access to things that are completely inappropriate. We're talking about child sexual exploitation. We're talking about being able to buy guns, drugs, literally get them mailed to your house. It is enormous. In fact, they believe that Google, etc., is about 5% of the web, and the rest, 95% orientated, is the dark web. So it is a murky world, and it's not good for young people to be on there at all, because they haven't formed their understanding of who they are and what the world is for them at this point. So psychologically, the things that they can come across, the things that they can see, can be very traumatic. And what we know about activation factors where these killers are concerned is trauma often plays a part. And usually that's prepubescent or early onset adolescent trauma. And without a doubt, Scarlett will be accessing material that is traumatizing. She might think she's enjoying it, but the point is, it's nonetheless traumatizing. And if you have these vulnerabilities, then you are exacerbating the fractures in your foundation by viewing them. I think any parent out there has probably had situations with their own children where they've had conversations with them about some of the material that they've seen, and it's horrifying. I myself have had to sit down with my youngest son because he was sent a Snapchat by an individual who was the victim of the cartel. And let me tell you, the images he's seen will never leave his mind. He didn't ask for that trauma. He didn't want that trauma. He certainly didn't invite that trauma, but that trauma became part of his vocabulary, part of his experience, because somebody decided to send it to him. Like I said, when you are young, you are not ready for this information and you don't know the impact it's going to have on you, even on your neural pathways in the brain when you actually see it. She goes quite a long way when she's searching for things that I would say are very unpalatable. So she's searching for images of real life killings, of torture. And to some degree, they believe this desensitizes her to murder. And experts have said it probably did damage her psyche. And I would 100% agree with that. But at the same point, you have to have a predisposition for that to occur. For most of us, it wouldn't desensitize us. I talk about crime all the time. You watch crime all the time. It does not desensitize me in any way, shape or form. If anything, I feel even a deeper connection with victims. Yes, you compartmentalize things in a slightly different structure, but nonetheless, you are moved constantly. In fact, it's the being moved that makes you return. It's not the gruesomeness. It's the desire to see people brought to justice for the heinous crimes. Now, in October 2022, Scarlett ends up getting suspended from Culture High School, so she's excluded from that school. And one of the things that had led to this was she'd apparently given another pupil who was 13 years of age cannabis sweets. But the problem was the kid didn't know that they were cannabis sweets, and that child ended up hospitalised. So she's sadistic. That's the only way that we can describe that action. To spike another child with a drug that they're unaware of would be terrifying for that child. And understandably, after this happens, the police were called in, but the victim's parents were obviously very sensitive and empathic to what young people do and the consequences of the actions that can lead to bigger problems in the future, because they don't criminalize Scarlett. They actually don't want any further action against her. But the school decide that it's time for her to leave, and therefore she's transferred to Birchwood High School. This is where Brianna went to school. Now, this was a managed transfer, and that meant that obviously they would see how she was going, so she wouldn't automatically have a permanent place there. There would be a period of time where her behaviour would be looked at to make sure that she was an appropriate fit. And that head teacher said there were literally no alarm bells where Scarlett was concerned. She came across as polite. She came across as quite introverted, quite quiet. And they didn't actually know that Scarlett had drugged another pupil at our old school. They had been told that Scarlett had been caught with cannabis edibles. That was the incident that kind of led to her being transferred, and that Scarlett acknowledged that it was a mistake. But that's a big difference to the reality of what she'd done. I mean, yeah, it's not great being caught with cannabis edibles when you're in high school, but to actually have given another child that edible and to have made that child so sick they ended up in hospital, that's assault. And even if it's not been criminally prosecuted, the school that she's being moved to should be made aware of that. Now, at this point, Scarlett was placed in the inclusion unit. And the inclusion unit is basically for troubled students. And Brianna was actually being taught there, not because she was trouble at school, quite the contrary, more that Brianna struggled with her anxiety. And so being in bigger groups was challenging for her. So understandably, because of those sliding doors moments, Scarlett meets Brianna. And I would say that Scarlett formed a very unhealthy obsession to some degree with Brianna by the end of 2022. And she's really fixated on Brianna as a person. Now, bear in mind, for Brianna, Scarlett's a friend. The two of them would hang out together after school. It's not as though they knew each other for a huge amount of time. And certainly Brianna's mother didn't know Scarlett, so it hadn't got to that stage yet. But clearly, Brianna's going to consider Scarlett an ally, and Scarlett seems to act as if Brianna's an ally as well. Now, Eddie Ratcliffe, who's the other perpetrator in this crime, he's from Lee. He attended Cultured High School. He's very introverted, but wow, very intelligent. So at school, he was in the top set and he was genuinely treated as a role model for other students. He was preparing to sit 9 GCSEs and he was actually aspiring to go to university to study microbiology. Highly intelligent, but to those who knew him, he was very socially awkward. Also comes from a great family. Eddie's mother is an award-winning graphic designer. She's also a wellness guru. So both children are being brought up in good families. Scarlett and Eddie had actually met at Cultured High School. They met when they were 11 and they did have a close friendship. They apparently started to talk, shall we say, about murder around November 2022. In January, Eddie was actually boasting about buying a knife. He'd been on a family skiing holiday in Bulgaria. That knife that he was boasting about was sadly the knife that was used to murder Brianna. Scarlett and Eddie started to become more motivated in the arena of planning killing. They drew up a kill list of potential targets that they essentially decided they were going to murder together over the preceding weeks. On that list, it included targets that were two enemies of Scarlett. There was a boy that Eddie described as a nonce, and also a boy referred to as M. And that boy was basically a rival for the affections of a girl that Eddie liked. So they were just talking about killing these people in the messages. And Scarlett said, if we kill M, I can keep some things, a couple of teeth and an eye. Now, bear in mind, we know that serial killers who are organised in particular, like mementos, it anchors them back to the crime, means they can relive it. Also, consider the fact that Richard Ramirez was absolutely obsessed with the way that you looked when he killed you. He loved looking at the fear in your eyes. He removed the eyes of one of his victims because he just wanted to relive that feeling again and again and again. So I would imagine that Scarlett is connecting with his type of memento collecting in that moment. But even at this point, where you just consider it potential fantasy, that's not what we're really talking about. It just seems so outlandish to imagine that these teenagers are actually talking about something that they want to do. When you hear about these messages, when you hear about these conversations, often it just is in the land of fantasy. It's just people having fun. It's people being macabre. It's people having malevolent conversations, but it's not got the intention. But that's where this story differs, because the intention is absolutely clear. Now, on the 15th of December, Brianna, who hasn't been in that conversation about killings until this point, she gets introduced into the conversation. Scarlett sends a message to Eddie saying, I'm obsessed over someone I know, but don't have feelings for them. She's called Brianna. I don't know how to explain. Also, she has a... And then she says something inappropriate about an area of her body that differentiates her from Brianna. And then she writes, lol, after it. Eddie then responded basically with offensive slurs. Scarlett then told Eddie that Brianna was trans and that she sounded just like a girl and looked really pretty, which indeed she did. There is something very feminine about Brianna. It's as simple as that. She's quite a petite girl as well. Eddie then responded, I don't think you're necessarily in love, but I think you're more curious and intrigued by its unnatural nature. So to some degree, Scarlett seems to be interested in Brianna. She seems to be looking at her on an attraction level. And I wonder whether part of that conflict for her is one of the driving forces that actually she finds Brianna really attractive. She finds her really interesting. She maybe doesn't feel at peace with the feelings that she feels towards her. And that is something that gives her a level of discomfort. The very fact that Eddie is trying to suggest that maybe it's not that she's attracted to her or, quote, in love, but it's more that she's just fascinating because she's different is interesting to me. Now, in January, Scarlett's obsession with Brianna starts to turn darker. So at this point, Scarlett's speaking to Eddie about trying to kill Brianna with an overdose of pills because people, quote, already know she's depressed and shit, so nobody would get suspicious. Just gonna throw it out there, Scarlett. I'm not entirely convinced that that's how it works. I'm not entirely convinced that if somebody's just found having been a victim of an overdose, that immediately everyone's just like, it's completely innocent. I think you'll find they still do some pretty important investigating. It's not like a case closed scenario. Anyway, after this conversation, they basically settle on killing Brianna after the teenage boy that they wanted to kill, quote, smelt a rat. So Brianna is not the initial person that they identify to murder. Now, Scarlett and Eddie, in this situation where this young man had smelt a rat, they'd attempted to lure him outside using this fake Instagram account, but the boy just knew there was something wrong, so they actually blocked the account at this point, because it's not about who they kill, it's about killing. That's the motivator, bear that in mind, because they wanted to kill this boy, they don't get to do that, so then they're like, okay, who do we kill now? And so Brianna is who they settle on. And part of that is to do with the fact that she has a trusting relationship with Scarlett. So unlike in the situation that I've just described, where the boy doesn't necessarily have a strong relationship with those two, and therefore when he's getting these messages from an Instagram account that he doesn't recognize, he just thinks, yeah, this doesn't make sense, and he blocks it. What Scarlett knows is that she can manipulate Brianna into a position where she believes she can be trusted, and that will mean that Brianna will come where they are asking her to come. Now, in messages between Scarlett and Eddie, this is where they've decided on Brianna, Eddie said, yeah, it'll be easier, and I want to see if it will scream like a man or a girl. The dehumanisation in that statement is horrific, and this is why I understand there was such an outcry regarding it being considered a hate crime, because of this kind of language. The very fact that he refers to Brianna as an it is a way of disassociating himself from the action. If it is an it is not a human. If it is an it can be discarded of, like an it can be discarded of, without conscience or care. It's a mindset to disassociate one from the action that you're actually thinking of carrying out, and it is harrowing that a 15-year-old boy would write in this way.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
And when they dug into this case with the investigation, it was clear that this attack on this 16-year-old girl had been planned in intricate detail. So first of all, the plan, as I said, to give her a cocaine overdose, in fact, before realizing that they couldn't actually afford the cocaine. Scarlett said at this point, let's just stab her. It's more fun. So they've gone through potential actions to eventuate in the death of Brianna. And now they've arrived at the most brutal decision. Scarlett first arranged to meet Brianna on Saturday, the 28th of January, but Brianna basically cancelled last minute. She had a family meal to go to, so that didn't happen. And in Scarlett's room, they actually found a handwritten note that said, Saturday, 11th February, 2023. Victim, Brianna Guy. And they also had this plan for how they were going to murder Brianna. But the very fact that they've got this plan, they've got this date, they're speaking to each other, Scarlett's actually sending that message to Eddie on the 3rd of February, it demonstrates how this is going from fantasy into absolute reality. Now, Scarlett, she regularly walks her family's dog in Linear Park. It's a few minutes from her house, but Eddie, he'd never actually been there. But this is where Scarlett has decided the location's going to be for the attack. And the worst part is, that's exactly what they do. So all the things that we've just been talking about, we've been talking about it with the potential that it was never going to become real. That it was just two teenagers living in a sense of fantasy, coming up with these ideas that they were never actually going to go ahead and carry out. But we're not. We're talking about the planning of a murder and the actual carrying out of that murder. That happens on the 11th of February. They lure Brianna to the park on the pretense of getting high on cocaine. And I don't for one minute think that Brianna went there for that. I just think Brianna went there because she wanted to hang out with friends. I don't even think she believed for a minute that the cocaine was part of it. But, you know, you're young. You don't want to be the person to say, well, this isn't really going to happen. You just want to be the person who gets to spend time with people that you like. And she clearly had a level of trust for Scarlett. In the immediate aftermath of the horrific stabbing, it's now that the two killers decide that they want to get away with it and they think that they've crafted a plan that's going to work. So Scarlett tries to create an alibi. So she actually sent a message from Brianna's phone saying, girl, where are you? That's why the message and Brianna's body being found are so close together, because Brianna had nothing to do with it. It was 100% Scarlett. And the whole premise of that is she's trying to distance herself from the actual stabbing. But then it all kind of falls away from them. No matter how great this plan is that they had, people notice things that are out of character. So first of all, the pair are actually spotted running away by the dog walker who discovers Brianna's body. So she's noticed this couple of kids running, and then she's found Brianna's body and she's connecting the two immediately. So the police start looking at CCTV, and Scarlett and Eddie are caught on various CCTV cameras and video doorbells, because bear that in mind, people don't think about just how monitored we are these days. But the truth is, you walk down the street, like 15 different houses are recording you walking past the house. At the end of the day, you don't have a delivery driver these days who isn't spotted on a Ring doorbell. You can't do anything pretty much as society without somebody capturing it. And that's a good thing in these cases. It can feel overwhelming at times to imagine that you're always being followed, Big Brother and so on and so forth. But in these circumstances, it makes such a difference to perpetrators of crimes being caught. So Eddie and Scarlett have not factored in the digital age that we're working in and living in. And so they're making their escape without realizing that every single step they take is being recorded. Now, once they get back to the homes, they resume their messages to each other because clearly they want to act like everything's normal. And then when the murder news comes out, when it begins spreading, then they put into action looking shocked and surprised and they can't believe this has happened. But by 11 p.m. that night, I would say, the mask of confidence is slipping. Scarlett asks Eddie if he had any anxiety about getting caught, and he replied, probably. And she responded, you're not going to get caught. Don't worry. Police are shite here. Oh, Scarlett, you really don't know very much about police and investigations, do you, my love? I mean, genuinely, the idea that she has the arrogance at that age to say, don't worry, police are shite here. Well, they may not be brilliant all the time, but let me tell you, there are so many terrible decisions made, aside from the obvious one, which is they kill this innocent 16-year-old child. But then they are recorded all the way through making their escape. They've got all of these notes written down in books. They've got a kill list and so on and so forth. There wasn't a lot of investigating that needed to take place for them to be banged to rights. But let's be clear. If you happen to have the dark triad of personality traits, narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism, and on top of that, you're young, so you haven't got the capacity to be sophisticated, even though you might think you're the cleverest person in the world, it will be a recipe for disaster when it comes down to planning and executing a crime. You just haven't got the capacity to do it in a way that will in any way, shape or form mean you escape. Investigators will take moments to discover that you are the perpetrator. Now, following the murder, they're trying to cover the tracks. So Scarlett's posting on Snapchat. She posts a tribute to Brianna. She actually goes as far as to say that Brianna was such an amazing friend and one of the best people I've ever met. That's true, I would imagine. Genuinely, even though we're talking about Brianna's murderer in this moment doing that, I would say what she puts out there is true. She was an amazing friend and she was one of the best people that Scarlett had ever met. And what a shame that Scarlett hadn't honoured her friend, that Scarlett hadn't allowed that knowledge of this young girl to prevent her from carrying out the murderous actions of that day. Now, by 7:30 p.m. on the day after the murder, both of the teens are arrested. That's how long it takes the shite police to actually find them. Now, this is actually partly because Scarlett's mum had called the police. because Scarlett had admitted that she'd been with Brianna shortly before she was killed. And I know that Scarlett's mother probably did that just to help the police investigation. Maybe she did have a level of suspicion potentially over her daughter, but I think that's incredibly brave of Scarlett's mum. Because even if it's just completely innocent and she thinks that maybe Scarlett would be able to help the police with their investigation, it just shows you the kind of person her mother is. She's good. She's a good human being. She wants to make sure that whoever has harmed Brianna is brought to justice. Now, the reality is that Scarlett had basically tried to cover her tracks. And she said, look, I was with Brianna before she actually went off with some lad from Manchester. So her mother probably believes that by speaking to the police, she's going to be able to identify that Brianna did go off with some guy from Manchester and maybe that's going to be the potential suspect. But understandably, Scarlett has started to unravel now because she's placed herself as one of the last people potentially to have seen Brianna alive. And we all know what that means in cases on the whole. You're the last person to see somebody alive, the last notable person to have actually been with them. You are going to be in the line of fire when it comes to being a suspect. Now, shortly before she gets arrested, Scarlett messages Eddie to tell him that her mum's spoken to the police. And she says, make sure your story adds up. Say to the police everything. We met Brianna at 1:30. We walked to Linear. We sat in children on a bench. Then Brianna looked at her phone and said she was going to meet some lad and walked off. So this is actually the same story that Scarlett uses in her first police interview. Now, when the police just confront her with the evidence against her, in particular the text message, because clearly she's put it in writing that she's creating this absolute lie, at that point she starts answering no comment. Now, for a young person of 15 years of age to start answering no comment, you can tell she has watched a lot of crime content and she knows that she has the right to do that. It's not what we would usually see in these circumstances, because at 15 years of age, you're not really thinking on your feet in that context, and you tend to just feel that you're in a scenario where you're with authority and you have to answer their questions. She clearly doesn't feel that way. The minute that she knows they've smelt a rat, the minute that she knows they've got evidence that is linking her with the killing, at that point she closes up and says no comment. Now, Eddie, from the get-go, from the moment he is arrested, is basically like, I can explain. You can't explain, Eddie. No one can explain this. You don't get to explain away anything when it comes down to the murder of a young girl with the rest of her life to lead. But his main defense is, it wasn't me. It was all Scarlett. I did nothing. So he basically gave the police 5 full interviews. He said that Scarlett was the one who told him a lie about the guy from Manchester. He insisted that the truth was that Scarlett had stabbed Brianna while he had his back turned to urinate. So, you know, this major attack on Brianna. Bear in mind, as I said, how many stab wounds she experienced, right? But this can apparently all occur whilst Eddie has his back turned and is taking a piss. That's what he's saying. So this is nothing to do with him. He didn't even see it happening. He didn't even know it was happening. And then when he turned around, it was all too late. Obviously, that's a lie. But he is just running for the hills and hoping that he can hang Scarlett out to dry. Now, Scarlett, who started off with this story of this guy from Manchester and Brianna going off of her own volition, as things have all started to fall apart, she also ends up changing her story entirely. And the likelihood is, firstly, she's bright. So she sees that forensic evidence couldn't connect her to the knife. They can't do that. Therefore, she thinks to herself, okay, well, they can't directly connect me to the knife. So I want to be very clear. Eddie was the one who stabbed Brianna whilst she had her back turned. So again, this turning of your back scenario is bizarre to any jury. The idea that somebody can stab somebody over 20 times and you have got your back turned the whole time is going to be ludicrous. And I'll tell you why. The minute that you were in a group, back turned or otherwise, and somebody takes a knife to one of your group, the person who's getting stabbed is going to be making a fuss. They're going to be screaming. They might be fighting. They might be asking for help. You're not going to have your back turned for very long, even if in some bizarre universe we can buy into the belief that either of these did turn their back and then the attack started. At that point, they can get involved to protect the victim, to try to stop the thing playing out, to call the emergency services. What you don't do is turn your back, turn around, see somebody stabbed multiple times and walk away. That makes you complicit. And the truth is, we know that that's not what happened in this case. It's just the way that they are both trying to project blame onto the other to minimise their actions and to essentially, hopefully in their minds, mean that they're going to look like the less culpable party. So at this point, Scarlett's saying, listen, the only reason I lied to you, as in when she was speaking to the police, is because I wanted to defend Eddie. Because at the end of the day, he's my friend and I didn't want him to get into trouble. And also, I know that we've been messaging each other and I don't look good in the messages. So I think that maybe I'm going to come across as guilty. So I needed to create this backstory. It's just lie, 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 lie. Now, detectives were so glad that they actually caught this pair very quickly because they genuinely believed if they hadn't been arrested that quickly, they could have moved on to another victim. They were that worried about the potential of this pair. We get to November 2023, and this is when they both end up, about 16 years of age, standing trial at Manchester Crown Court. At this point, the pair's names nor the schools they attended were actually published because they hadn't decided on lifting the anonymity order. So Scarlett was referred to as Girl X and Eddie was referred to as Boy Y. The jurors heard that since their arrest, both of the individuals had been diagnosed with various degrees of neurodivergence. So Scarlett was diagnosed with traits of ADHD or autism and anxiety. Eddie was diagnosed with a mild form of autism and had high levels of anxiety and also selective mutism. So Eddie no longer spoke to anyone but his mother. So he was allowed to type his answers in court. For those of you who don't know what selective mutism is, it means that you can communicate, but you can only communicate with specific people that you feel a level of comfort with. I have worked with selective mute children, and it's quite hard for people to understand because they can have conversations with safe people. It might be a parent, it might be a friend, it might be six or seven people that they feel completely at peace at. They might go home and run around the house screaming and laughing and have loads of conversations with people in the home. And then the minute that they leave the home, they won't speak at all. And it can be really frustrating for people who don't understand it because you're like, just speak. You can speak. Why can't you speak? But the truth is the level of anxiety is so enormous, it literally renders them mute and they can't. So clearly, Eddie has got this kind of anxiety disorder that has now played into him just genuinely not communicating with anybody apart from his mother. So he's typing these answers in court. So the jurors are informed as to why he's acting in this way. He's not being objectionable. He's not being challenging. He just genuinely can't get the words out. Now, as I said, during the trial, the way the kids go for it is to basically blame each other for the killing. Eddie said that Scarlett was, quote, not a normal person who would, quote, joke about dead babies. I mean, Eddie, I'm just going to throw it out there. I think you're pushing it a little bit here that Scarlett's the bad person. At the end of the day, it was your hunting knife. You were massively involved with it and you got involved in the killing per se. So she might joke about dead babies, but you'll be the one laughing. It's as simple as that. He also went on to tell the court that it was Scarlett that asked him to bring the hunting knife to the park and that she was the one who had the plan to stab Brianna and that he didn't have a plan to do that. He said that he didn't take her plan seriously, that she was always talking about murder and nothing eventually happens. He also said that in the park, he went to urinate and from behind a tree, he basically heard clothes rustling, a thud and a puncturing sound. No screams, apparently. No screams. I mean, come on. You hear a puncturing sound, which you wouldn't hear, believe me, you know, because the puncturing sound would be muffled by the screams of the victim. But again, absolute projection, minimization, not his fault, completely down to Scarlett's actions. He also said that he saw Scarlett stabbing Brianna when she was on the floor, and he said that he saw her doing it at least three times. He said that there was blood everywhere on the floor and also around Brianna. He then said that he put his hands on Brianna to see what happened, which is bizarre. And then he got lots of blood on him from her. That's what happens. When you stab somebody to death, they bleed a lot, Eddie. That's what happens. Also, he noted that dog walkers approached, and at that point, Scarlett told him they've got to run. He then said that he asked Scarlett why she'd stabbed Brianna. And Scarlett had said that Brianna had tried to get her to break up with a boyfriend and that it's unforgivable. So it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. None of this makes sense. It's just word salad. It's just an excuse. It's just trying to throw anything in to suggest that there was a reason why Scarlett murdered Brianna and why he didn't, because he didn't have any issue with her. So why would he be the one doing it? That's his excuse. He then said that after Scarlett had murdered Brianna, she gave him back the knife. And he even went as far as to say, listen, I had no animosity towards Brianna. It didn't bother me that she was transgender and so on and so forth. So he's painting himself as a completely innocent victim. And I don't think that's going to look good.
Hey, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
For him with the jury. There is nothing more infuriating for a jury than knowing that people should take accountability and responsibility and they're refusing to do so, because you need somebody to be accountable and responsible if they're ever going to change. And just saying it wasn't me and creating this ludicrous story that no one can buy into is not going to look good for him. Now, when it came down to Scarlett's defense, well, she was like, oh, you know what? Any idea of harming Brianna, it was just fantasy. It's just fantasy. Sorry? Yeah, it's just fantasy. Was it fantasy? Yes, it was just fantasy. It was a mere fantasy. What's a fantasy? Well, it's when you imagine something in your head, but you don't act on it. So it's something that you imagine in your head, but you don't actually do. That is right. That is what a fantasy is. I agree that's what a fantasy is, but that's not what happened, is it? Because you actually killed her. No, no, it's still a fantasy. It was a fantasy of harming her. You know what's interesting? I'm going to let the jury all have a fantasy of what they would like ideally to happen to you. And then we'll use the same way a fantasy works in your head for you, consequentially, from their fantasies directed to you. How does that feel? I'm feeling like that's not the kind of fantasy that I'd like to have happen to me. Yes. Juror one, if you could just come forward with your fantasy. Ooh, the liquidizer. Sorry. You know what I mean, though. Come on. Fantasy. Just been a fantasy. So she said, you know, we were just going to go and hang out in the park and we stopped near this bench. And then I just got a bit bored. And so I went and stretched my legs. And then all of a sudden I heard a noise. And then it was like someone was screaming. It wasn't that someone was screaming. It was like someone was screaming. I don't quite know what she meant when she said it was like someone screaming. It clearly would be someone screaming. But in her mind, it was like someone screaming. And at this point, she's alerted and turns around. And then to shock horror, she sees Eddie stabbing Brianna, and she ups it. She says he stabbed her at least 5 times, whereas he said it was 3 times for her. She said she then watched Brianna fall down and land face down, and that she was just in shock. She didn't know what to do. She didn't know how it happened. She actually went over to check on Brianna to see if she was breathing, but she couldn't tell. And then when Eddie ran off, she panicked and also fled. So it's all Eddie. It's all Eddie. I mean, even though this is the most brutal, grotesque killing, there is something so childlike about the way they are handling the defence, isn't it? There is something that brings you back into sharp focus that we're dealing with now 16-year-olds, but we're 15 at the time of the killing. This is exactly what we expect kids to do. They blame each other. Don't get me wrong, we see it in crimes where adults are concerned, but certainly in this, it just resonates that these are children. These are children that have butchered this poor girl to death. Now, Eddie's defense, Richard Littler Casey, he said that Eddie was really vulnerable and that he'd been controlled and manipulated by Scarlett. Littler said that Scarlett's story was ridiculous and that it was literally a carbon copy of Eddie's. I'm not sure that Littler's correct here, that just because somebody has the same story as their co-conspirator, that it makes it less honest. I mean, it could just be, and I would add that it will be, they're both lying through their teeth. But he went on to say that basically Scarlett had made up the story after hearing Eddie's account to police. And he said it was Scarlett who told Brianna to buy a single ticket when she was travelling to meet up with the pair. And he asked Scarlett if it was her idea, and she had actually admitted it was her idea. Now, I don't doubt for a minute that she did tell Brianna to get the single ticket. I don't doubt for a minute that potentially the victim choice was Scarlett's idea. I don't doubt potentially that Scarlett might have been deeply motivated by malevolent thoughts and feelings and wanting to hurt people. You can't drag somebody along as a passenger in this killing, though. Eddie was there. It's his knife. He is as captivated as Scarlett is in this case. Now, Scarlett did admit to luring Brianna to the park. She admitted to lying to her mum, to her boyfriend, and to the police about what had happened. But clearly, she's going to stick with the same story that it wasn't her, it was Eddie, and vice versa. Now, the prosecution, they argue it was a case of joint enterprises, that the planning and botched efforts meant that both teens were guilty of murder, regardless of who wielded the knife. And the text messages exchanged between the two in the run-up and in the aftermath of the murder were used as evidence. And that makes perfect sense. The suggestion here is it doesn't really matter who landed the fatal blow. They both were essentially holding the knife by the way that they planned and executed this crime. So let's not get caught up on who did the actual final killing. Both of them are co-conspirators. The prosecution said that the messages showed they were preoccupied with violence and torture and death. Now, as I said, Scarlett's DNA wasn't actually found on the knife, and no blood was found on Scarlett's clothes, but Eddie's DNA was found on the handle of the knife, and blood was found on the blade and on Eddie's shoes and coat. So Scarlett's defence obviously used that, they pointed that out. But the prosecution said that Scarlett primed Eddie to be her assassin. And in Scarlett's phone, Eddie had actually been saved as Tesco John Wick. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? Tesco John Wick. Like a bargain basement John Wick. Like a lesser example of Keanu Reeves in a much more dinted tin episode of John Wick. So the very fact that she's being sarcastic about him in this way certainly does indicate that she saw him potentially as somebody who would carry out killings, just as John Wick does. He's an assassin in that story. Now, when cross-examined in court, Scarlett insisted that she'd basically done this because she thought that Eddie looked like a less good version of the character John Wick. But I think we can all agree it's probably both those things moulded together, that she knew that she could manipulate him to some degree, and also he had a look of this particular individual. Now, in court, the evidence was presented where Scarlett claimed that she had tried to kill Brianna on the 23rd of January. Because bear in mind, she's saying, I didn't do it, but we know that she'd come up with the idea of the overdose. So she claimed that she'd actually tried to kill her with an overdose of red ibuprofen tablets. So the jury was shown a message from Scarlett to Eddie that read, I should have given her some today that should have been enough to kill her, but she didn't die. Now, Brianna's mum actually told the police that Brianna was really ill around this time and vomited what she thought were grape seeds, but on reflection may well have been the tablet. So it could have been the second time that she'd actually tried killing Brianna. Now, Scarlett, of course, denied that she'd poisoned Brianna and said that she'd seen Brianna take the pills of her own accord in a supermarket toilet. But of course she's going to say that. She's not going to acknowledge that not only has she killed Brianna successfully on a final attempt, but had tried to do so in a previous attempt. Now, during the trial, one of the things that was notable is that Eddie showed absolutely no emotion. Also, Scarlett cried very little when she gave evidence. And it took, on the 20th of December, the jury less than 5 hours to unanimously find both teenagers guilty. So it was a really easy decision to make. And the fact that it only took 5 hours just shows you that there was no confusion for the jury. They absolutely know that these two are fully guilty and both culpable in the murder of Brianna. Now, following the conviction, it was actually ruled by Judge Mrs. Justice Yip that their identities should be revealed. And the reason for that was to help the public understand how children could do something so dreadful. So it's rare that we lift anonymity on children because of their futures. Obviously, when they're revealed to the world, you won't forget their faces. And that can mean if they get released down the line, it can be more problematic for them. Often it can mean that they'll be given new identities at a cost to the public and so on and so forth. So one of the reasons why they choose not to do that on the whole is to cost less to the taxpayer and also to protect the potential of reform in those individuals down the line. You change from being a child to an adult, and not saying that everybody changes, but I'm saying that most of us do. It could be that neither of these do, but they have the potential to, where it's very different when you're an adult. The idea is that you're almost fixed to some degree at that point, but there is hope where children are concerned. That's why they tend to refrain from letting the public know exactly who these people are. Now, following the guilty verdict, obviously that was music to the ears of Brianna's family. There's no joy, there's no celebration, but thank goodness that they got that verdict. Brianna's mother, Esther, spoke of the terror that Brianna would have felt when she was turned on by people that she thought she could trust. She said,
"We miss Brianna so much, and our house feels empty without her laughter. To know how scared my usually fearless child must have been when she was alone in that park with someone that she called her friend will haunt me forever."
And I cannot even begin to imagine how she copes on a day-to-day level. I genuinely can't. I think that Brianna's mother is testament to somebody who will feel her pain and endure her pain a moment-to-moment basis, but will turn it into something incredible. I genuinely believe that. She's a warrior. She genuinely is. And Brianna's mum showed incredible empathy throughout with respect. So she told reporters,
"Please have some empathy and compassion for the families of the young people convicted of this horrific crime. They too have lost a child, and they must live the rest of their lives knowing what their child has done."
To have that dignity and that empathy, it's rare. And it speaks volumes about who she is as a human being. Now, following that conviction, the pair were basically branded by detectives as, quote, very warped individuals who demonstrated a thirst for killing. And I think that's true. It's a thrill killing, isn't it? It's a thrill killing. They're in the category of Joanna Denegay, etc. They are people who enjoy the kicks of killing. They pumped themselves up. They motivated each other. They went through with this killing. They planned it and they got a great sense of excitement, and they genuinely thought they were clever enough to get away with it. And bear that in mind, they didn't go and admit what they'd done after. They didn't have a pang of conscience. They didn't start struggling immediately and realize the error of their ways. They wanted to get away with it. And if they could have, they would have. And chances are that they could have potentially then killed others. We get to the sentencing that happened on the 2nd of February 2024. Now, it's during that sentencing that it was revealed that Scarlett finally admitted that she did stab Brianna a number of times, despite previously blaming Eddie for all the blows. So now, basically, Scarlett has suddenly come out and said, "Listen, okay, I did actually stab her. I was involved in the killing." But despite the fact that she told experts this, in court, her own barrister said, "Listen, it was Eddie that was responsible for all the stab wounds, and that Scarlett had basically decided to confess because she felt responsible for Brianna's death." The judge, however, said that, quite frankly, it's impossible to believe anything she says, but she said that after Scarlett's conviction, it appeared that Scarlett wanted to paint herself in as bad a light as possible. So that's interesting, because on one hand, you have essentially Scarlett saying, "No, I do take responsibility. I do accept that I was involved in killing Brianna directly. I used the knife." But equally, the barrister's going, "Well, no, that story's changed, and it's changed for a reason." And the judge is saying as well that it's changed for a reason, which is she wants to seem like she was the person who is the main perpetrator, to look bad, because she's going to be serving a long sentence. And when you're serving a long sentence, your reputation in the area that you spend your sentence is important. If you're seen as a cold-blooded psychopathic killer, the people who share cells with you and are around you, well, they're going to be a little bit aware of being careful around you because you know what, you might just hurt them. Whereas if they find out you're just the manipulator, you didn't carry it out, then you're not as necessarily a threat as you would be seen if you were the main perpetrator. So it could be that Scarlett again is manipulating the situation because she knows she's banged to right. She knows she's going down. So if she's going to go down, she wants to be seen reputationally as somebody to be feared, and that would work in her favor. Equally, it could be that she is acknowledging that she was involved in the actual stabbing. But notably here, there is a reasoning why she has confessed this, and it's probably to make her life a little bit easier when she's inside. Now, some experts concluded that Scarlett didn't suffer from ADHD or autism, but instead had a form of conduct dissocial disorder. So this condition basically entails a limited range of prosocial emotions, and essentially represents an impending antisocial behavior disorder. So it's often the precursor for psychopathy. It means that she wouldn't have empathy, she'd be quite predatory, she'd be very controlling, but that does not constitute a medical illness or a mental illness. So she knew what she was doing and she knew it was wrong. Now, the court also heard at sentencing that Scarlett had written a second kill list since being taken into custody. So while she's been locked up in a secure unit, she's written this other kill list, which names some of the people who've been responsible for caring for her. They're on the kill list. It's got two or three members of staff at the secure unit on said kill list. So she hasn't changed. That's what we're saying. She is still acting exactly as she acted prior to being put into a secure unit. Now, during the sentencing, Eddie goes ahead and stands by his original story that he had in court. He said that Scarlett had inflicted all the stab wounds to Brianna whilst he was taking a wee against a tree. Eddie's barrister said that Scarlett's extensive planning placed her responsibility for the murder in a completely different category to Eddie. I disagree entirely. Eddie was involved in slaying this child, so I have no agreement with the barrister defending. I know this is what they will do, but it's just not true. Eddie is absolutely complicit. When determining the minimum sentence for the killers, the judge then had to consider whether the murder was motivated by sadism and hostility, as Brianna was transgender, because obviously that's an additional hate crime. Eddie had never met Brianna before, but in messages to Scarlett, he did use disparaging language. He referred to her as it. Scarlett didn't actually use transphobic language, but the prosecution said that Scarlett encouraged Eddie to kill Brianna, knowing that his attitude towards her would actually make him more likely to go ahead with the murder. Eddie's barrister, however, said that the cruel comments should be seen as offensive comments made by an autistic adolescent. So he's saying that it wasn't that he was moved essentially to kill by the fact that she was transgender. He was just a stupid young person without the nuances or understanding of what he was doing, and also the autism played into the way that he spoke. So the barrister basically said that the fact that Brianna was transgender was immaterial to Eddie and should be immaterial to the sentence. He said that Eddie would have helped Scarlett kill irrespective of whether the target was a boy or a girl, which makes sense because clearly they were going to kill somebody else initially. In court, it was also said that Scarlett enjoyed planning the murder, and Scarlett admitted in messages to being obsessed with Brianna. She'd enjoyed thinking about killing her, and the main motivation was that she considered Brianna was a friend, but anticipated that Brianna was one day going to leave her, and so she wanted to kill her so she'd always be with her. That's a very serial killer-esque kind of suggestion, isn't it? Oh, they were going to abandon me and I want to keep them. I want to possess them, so I kill them to do so. And the judge, however, in spite of all these arguments, said that there was evidence of sadism, there was evidence of transphobia, but they had to consider whether that was enough to lead to an even longer sentence. Now, a victim impact statement was read to the court. Brianna's mother, Esther Guy, said, "The hardest thing about her daughter's ordeal was finding out that one of her killers, Scarlett, was someone we believed to be her friend. She described Jenkinson as someone that we trusted, someone that I was so happy that Brianna had, fearing that my child had been lonely, not knowing that this person had been planning to not only cause harm, but to take the life of my precious child. All I can think about is she would have been scared and I wasn't there for her. She needed me to protect her." Brianna wasn't a fighter, and she must have been so terrified. The day of and the days following 11th of February were and always will be the worst days of my life. I felt like someone had killed part of me, like my heart had been ripped out. I've never felt such grief, and I would never wish that pain on anyone else. She described Jenkinson and Ratcliffe as a danger to society, adding, "The thought of Scarlett and Eddie being released from prison absolutely horrifies me. I don't believe that someone who is so disturbed and obsessed with murder and torture would ever be able to be rehabilitated." Brianna's father, Peter Spooner, said, "Even though I grieved the son I lost, I was proud to gain another beautiful daughter. Her appearance changed as she blossomed into a lovely young girl. Her eyes were the same. She had my eyes."
Hey, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
When I looked at her, we were forming a new relationship, and these two murderers have stolen that from us both. I hate how Brianna's life has been brutally taken away from her, and she has been deprived of the life she wanted to give and live. She never had the chance to sit her exams or go on to further education. Now my world has been torn apart. Justice may have been done with the guilty verdicts, but no amount of time spent in prison will be enough for these monsters. I cannot call them children. That makes them sound naive or vulnerable, which they're not. They're pure evil. Brianna was the vulnerable one. They were determined to kill and never gave up until they had blood on their hands. My Brianna's blood. Not an ounce of remorse has been shown from these murderers. Putting myself and my family through this awful trial, having to hear the details about how Brianna suffered, it's unforgivable. Brianna's stepfather, Wesley Powell, said, "Brianna had a large online following, but in reality, she was lonely, vulnerable, in need of a close friend. Both Eddie and Scarlett knew this and preyed upon her vulnerabilities, acting as two predators stalking their prey." Very, very powerful words, and so accurate on all levels, because Brianna, in her heart, believed that these human beings that she would spend space and time with could enhance her life. And instead, they took her life. Both Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe were jailed for life. Scarlett was told she must serve a minimum of 22 years. Eddie was told that he must serve a minimum of 20 years. The judge said that the pair may indeed never be free.
"I have weighed all the aggravating and mitigating factors that apply to each of you. Although I have taken the same starting point, I have concluded that the final minimum terms must be different. In Scarlett's case, the aggravating features are significant and would have led to a substantial uplift to the starting point, but for the mitigation, particularly that relating to maturity and mental disorder. There must still be an uplift, but it will be moderated. In Eddie's case, I find that the balance to be struck between aggravating factors, which are not quite as high as in Scarlett's case, and the mitigation I have identified, is such as to cancel each other out. In saying that, I have taken account of all the medical evidence and accept the diagnosis of ASD has some impact. But the extent to which it reduced your culpability in the circumstances of this offending is limited. This was undoubtedly a very serious offence with multiple aggravating factors. That is the context in which I impose minimum terms, which are lengthy for offenders of your age, albeit significantly less than an equivalent sentence for an adult. The parole board will have to decide if and when either or both of you can be released. That will only happen if you no longer pose a danger. If you are released, you will remain on license for life and you may be recalled to prison. I will now sentence each of you. You may remain seated. In both cases, the relevant statutory surcharge will apply. Scarlett Jenkinson, for the murder of Brianna Jai, you will be detained at His Majesty's pleasure. I set the minimum term at 22 years, less the 352 days that you have spent on remand. Eddie Radcliffe, for the murder of Brianna Jai, you will be detained at His Majesty's pleasure. I set the minimum term at 20 years, less the 352 days that you have spent on remand. Please take the defendants to the cells and their legal teams will come and see them before they go to begin their sentences. Thank you.
The judge said that the teens had taken part in a brutal and planned murder, which was sadistic in nature, and where a secondary motive was hostility to Brianna on the basis of her transgender identity. Esther Guy said that she actually had moments where she felt sorry for the killers, even though they'd ruined her life, they'd ruined their own lives as well. But she also said that this change, that empathy and understanding and trying to be compassionate towards those two killers, it wavered because knowing the true nature of both of them and hearing about it in court and seeing neither of them display even an ounce of remorse, she just lost all sympathy. She actually said she's really glad that they're going to spend so many years in prison, so many years away from society. Now, the family of Scarlett have spoken out, and they are victims too. They described the last year as, quote, beyond our worst nightmares. They said they agreed with the verdict, sentence and the decision to name the culprits and said they are truly sorry for her horrific crimes. They even went on to thank Brianna's mother. They said, we offer our sincere thanks to Esther Guy for her incredible selflessness and empathy towards our family. Her compassion is overwhelming and we are forever grateful. There is something really unique about Esther. For those of you who've watched her interviews, who've heard about her compassion, she is so unique in a million ways because her heart is so huge. And following her daughter's death, she's even launched a campaign in Brianna's name to teach empathy and compassion in schools. She's met Scarlett's mother. She's got total empathy for her. And the campaign that she runs is Peace in Mind. And the whole premise is this, is to provide support to young people like Brianna who had mental health issues. So to take the loss and to make the legacy, to allow her daughter's life to stand for something positive, even in light of the brutality that her own life was ended. Interestingly, whilst Eddie Radcliffe was on remand, he passed 8 GCSEs, is apparently studying for 5 A-levels. What a waste of such a potentially promising future. But I guess at least he has a future, unlike Brianna. He's actually appealing his sentence. I doubt that that's going to go anywhere, but nonetheless, again, to me, it demonstrates a lack of regard for his actions. And until he takes responsibility for those actions, he's always going to be a danger. Now, interestingly, Eddie Radcliffe's father has been sentenced to 15 months in prison after pleading guilty to indecent exposure and of taking an indecent image of a child. So Kyle Radcliffe, who's 36, from Wigan, he admitted 2 offences of exposure involving 2 16-year-old girls at a bus stop, which were committed in November last year, shortly before his son went on trial. He also pleaded guilty to taking an indecent photo of a prepubescent girl by covertly recording a video of her without her consent in a changing room in August 2023. He's previously been convicted of exposure dating back to 2008 and 2012. And the judge in that case said, the offences within this indictment coupled with your previous convictions make it quite clear that you have a sexual attraction towards female children and teenagers whom you objectify for the purposes of your own sexual gratification. Sometimes you look at families and you look at the fractures that run through them and you think, there is something highly dysfunctional within the DNA of these individuals. And I think where Eddie Radcliffe is concerned, we certainly see that when you consider what his father's gone to prison for. So I really hope that I have done Brianna justice. Like I said, her mother is an icon when it comes down to forgiveness, understanding, compassion, legacy, and a desire to make sure that for the rest of her days, Brianna Guy's name her memory, her meaning, will 100% never be forgotten, and indeed will transform the lives of other teenagers positively. Because of her loss, others will heal. And whilst that is dreadful on one level, it gives us hope on another. Be safe, guys. See you again next time.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Listen.